From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, June 26, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Red Zone Wireless, providing a local alternative for broadband throughout Maine. Learn more at redzonewireless.com.
Federal Judge D. Brock Hornby has ruled that a Maine law prohibiting the use of publicly funded tuition at religious schools is constitutional. For the third time, the Virginia-based Institute for Justice filed suit last summer against the Maine law, this time on behalf of three families in the state. Zachary Hyden, the legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Maine, says the law is well established.
For many years, Maine has been committed to not funding religious school education with taxpayer dollars. And they've defended that decision successfully now in court at least a half dozen times.
Judge Hornby acknowledged that the case would likely lead to higher courts and possibly the U.S. Supreme Court. Tim Keller, a senior attorney with the Institute for Justice, says his organization intends to appeal the ruling. And a Maine State prison inmate has filed a class action lawsuit against the Maine Department of Corrections and a private contractor that provides medical care to prisoners. Matthew Loisel alleges that the state has failed to adequately treat more than 500 inmates who have been diagnosed with chronic hepatitis C virus. Susan Sharon has more.
HCV is a highly communicable and progressive disease that, if left untreated, scars the liver and can lead to pain, cancer, and death. There are direct-acting antiviral medications that can cure most patients in a few weeks, but the drugs are expensive, costing tens of thousands of dollars.
Matthew was diagnosed with hepatitis C in March of 2014. And since that time, it has turned into a chronic hepatitis C virus.
Miriam Johnson is an attorney for Matthew Loisel.
His manifestations have included things such as fatigue, severe abdominal pain.
Johnson says the prison policy is not to provide antivirals unless a prisoner has experienced a severe level of liver damage. In a 2017 email, the DOC said only three prisoners out of more than 580 diagnosed with HCV were being treated with the medications. The complaint alleges that the denial of medicine for prisoners violates the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment, as well as the Americans with Disabilities Act. A spokesperson for the DOC said he could not comment on pending litigation. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And in weather tonight, isolated thunder north in mountains, spotty showers in the rest of the state with lows overnight in the 50s. And now, as part of Maine Public's deep dive on childcare this week, let's look outside Maine to the rest of New England. Advocate Judy Wright Parker is director of the National Policy Team at the Ounce of Prevention Fund in Chicago. Wright Parker told Maine Public Radio's Erwin Gratz that over the past decade, a lack of infrastructure and poor funding decisions have hurt Maine's childcare sector. She says other states are looking to address these same issues, including Rhode Island, which has created a child care facilities fund.
So in New England, we have very old building stock. And building a building as a childcare provider is incredibly expensive. I think the only time that really happens is if it's a very large center. So Rhode Island has a facilities fund, and they can be very low interest loans or they can be grants depending on the need. In Maine, we did this in the early 2000s. We had something called the Early Learning Opportunity Grant that was federal money. These were grants, and they were expected to just continue in the field for at least 5 years. In return for having this funding, right? So similar sort of thing, but in Rhode Island is permanent and it's part of a state investment.
How about some of the other states?
Yeah, so Connecticut also very strong resource and referral agency. The other thing that they have that is pretty significant connected to professional development is they have a very solid early childhood mental health consultation program. So if there is a child who's experienced trauma and, you know, children, they don't come to you and say, oh, I had this terrible experience and life is so hard, right? What they do is that they let you know through their behavior. In Connecticut, they have supports where if a child is having behavioral challenges in a childcare setting, there'll be a mental health consultant who'll come and do an observation. They might identify that the child needs some specialized therapy, but they might also give the provider some hints about ways that they might restructure the classroom environment or different ways to respond so that the child's behavior is redirected or de-escalated.
I know a lot of times we think about Maine as being a lot more progressive about social services than our neighbor, New Hampshire. I guess I'm wondering, how does New Hampshire deal with child care issues compared to us?
So New Hampshire has just recently, probably over the past 3 years, had a significant uptick in their interest and investment in early childhood and in child care in particular. One of the interesting things that they passed in this past legislative session was, in an attempt to address the opioid crisis for families, they used the definition of work to be defined as a family participating in addiction recovery. So that makes families eligible for the child care subsidy. And this year, they're looking at grandparents caring for grandchildren. For the child care subsidy, it's a block grant. It's incredibly flexible, and states can define work in any way they choose. So in this way, they took a look at the circumstances in their state. They recognized they had a problem and that families needed help. But it gives the parent a great more deal of confidence that when they are in their sessions, in their therapeutic sessions, their child is being well cared for.
And then there's Massachusetts.
Yes, Massachusetts. One of the things that Massachusetts does incredibly well is they use grants and contracts through their child care subsidy. In the past, we had a combination of child care subsidy vouchers, which is a portable subsidy that the parent carries with them to whatever provider. And then there were contracted slots. And those contracted slots were used, again, to provide a stability of care, possibly to make sure that there was a state investment in an age group that was underserved, like infants and toddlers, or children with special needs. So we once had a set of contracts with about 20 different providers across the state. And Massachusetts does that as well. And Massachusetts has done an incredibly good job with their contracts of making sure that there are strings attached to the money. So if you're going to have this guaranteed funding to keep your program stable, and you're going to reserve a set of slots for these low-income families, you're also going to make sure that these low-income families have access to comprehensive services. So if they need support in finding housing, you're going to figure out how to do that. If they need support in interviewing for jobs, you're going to have the right staff and the right kind of programs to help someone do that.
So at some level, this is a money question.
Mm-hmm.
There may be the block grant available, but as you pointed out, I think earlier, there needs to be some matching commitment on the part of the state. Mm-hmm. So how expensive is it for these states to provide these services?
It's not a small commitment. To do it well, to do it properly, it's a significant amount of money. The cost of not investing, particularly in childcare, means that the economy itself slows down. There's actually a study done here on the economic impact of childcare, and it's significant. Not only are the providers buying supplies and foods to provide the care, but it's also making it possible for families to have enough income to be able to live successfully and provide well for their children. Until we figure out how to better align the childcare market, we'll just continue to limp along.
All this week, Maine Public's taking a look at the state's child care challenges. One of those challenges is finding enough child care workers to meet the demand across the state. And as Fred Bever explores as part of Maine Public's deep dive into child care, some are trying hard to make a career and a difference in the traditionally high-stress, low-pay occupation.
What was that?
Sunflowers.
Sunflowers?
Yeah,
Anna and Ivan Soto are just like many other young parents with limited incomes in Maine. They're trying to figure out how to afford childcare for their 2-year-old daughter and newborn baby boy.
We don't have cable. We don't go on vacation. We don't go out to eat. We don't do those things.
And for the Sotos, there's an ironic twist. They are both full-time workers at a Portland childcare center. They've placed their daughter there, so they get a good rate, but they still pay $900 a month, about a fifth of their combined pre-tax salaries. Anne even testified to lawmakers this winter on a bill that would provide $2.5 million to supplement pay for early childhood teachers in Maine. That's based on education and experience.
Both my husband and I are employed full-time teaching preschool, and we are still unable to afford to send our own children, to a program without the assistance of a subsidy. And I am now facing a decision to decide whether to stay in a profession that I really love versus how I'm going to pay for my next child.
Soto says she's straining just to pay the interest on her school loans, never mind the principal. Her master's degree in elementary education and experience in the field do give her a bit of a leg up when it comes to pay, but it's still a struggle to make ends meet.
The issue is that the early childhood workforce in Maine is very low wage.
Sonia Howard is executive director of Maine Roads to Quality, which provides training opportunities and credentialing programs required for early childhood educators in state-licensed childcare facilities.
$11, $12 an hour is considered pretty typical for early care and education. And, I mean, you can also make that at Target and McDonald's. You know, that's a problem. That's a real problem. Because what a person needs for a skill level to be working with children every day is really huge. You need to know so much to be effective.
Howard says there is anecdotal evidence that the number of college-level students enrolling in early childhood education courses is dropping in Maine. But her non-college-level programs at Maine Roads to Quality have seen an uptick in enrollment, which Howard says may indicate that childcare centers in Maine are being forced to hire teachers with less education. A U.S. Department of Education survey in 2015 found that full-time childcare workers in Maine earned the second lowest annual median income in New England at $21,580.
It's a challenge in terms of not only finding qualified staff, but then retaining those highly qualified staff to stay within this workforce, especially when it's a labor of love, not always that it makes sense financially to continue doing this.
Annie Colaluca directs the childcare program at the Bath YMCA. She says that for all the passion childcare teachers bring to their work, there aren't enough of them. It took her 6 months last year to find someone qualified to teach children from infancy through 5 years old.
I had zero people apply. I had this job posted on Indeed. It was going out on Facebook. It was posted on serving schools.
The state's low unemployment rate is one factor. Another is the slow but steady increase in the number of public schools that are offering pre-kindergarten classes for four-year-olds and much better pay.
This year has been an interesting year because Portland Public Schools really made pre-K a priority.
Chameleon Babson-Haley runs a childcare center in Portland. She says the median pay for preschool teachers is almost 30% higher in Maine than for infant and toddler educators, and she says that has to change.
We're taking care of children at the most critical time in their lives in terms of building that foundation and sending them off into the world to be ready to do all the things we need to do. And it will help if you have more public pre-K classrooms that are being paid at a public teacher's salary. You'll have more teachers getting paid better, but those 0 to 3, all these teachers need to be getting paid better.
And they have safety. And no jumping.
No jumping.
This is not just a challenge for the state of Maine. It's a challenge across the entire country.
Todd Landry is the state's new leader for Maine's Office of Child and Family Services, and he's worked in the field in Nebraska and Texas. He notes that the federal government is increasing child care development grants to the state, and Maine, in turn, is increasing its subsidies for children who need child care to one of the highest levels in the nation. And that, Landry says, should lead to higher pay for frontline educators here.
Yeah, that's the whole intent. Hopefully that helps improve the quality, that helps to improve the sustainability of the programs, that helps to increase the retention of staff within those programs. All of those things are a cumulative effect that we want to work on.
And here in Maine, some additional help is on the way. The State Department of Labor is piloting a tuition assistance program for students in early childhood education. And that bill that Portland teacher Ann Soto wants to see passed, the Maine legislature this month gave initial approval to the measure to support Maine's childcare workforce. But lawmakers did not come up with the necessary funds. so the measure will be reconsidered next year. Soto and her husband, meanwhile, are just hoping for some kind of relief.
We might just be stuck in this for a while. And if that's the case, then families have to make their own choices about what they can and can't do and how long you can make it work in this field. But you have to be hopeful that it would change at some point.
The Sotos say that with a new arrival in the house, one of them may indeed have to drop out of the childcare field and find a better-paying job, or maybe just stay home with the kids. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Tomorrow on Morning Edition, Fred looks at some of the concerns around how Maine licenses childcare centers. And as we've been hearing just now and throughout our deep dive, the cost of childcare is an ongoing concern. Now, let's take a look at some of the federal proposals on the table aimed at addressing the demand for financial assistance. Mal Leary has that story.
Through subsidies to low-income families and tax breaks, the federal government provided nearly $13 billion in child care assistance in the last budget. But advocates say it's just not enough.
Families need child care so they can work, go to school, or enroll in training. But unfortunately, families right now across the U.S. are really struggling to find and afford the care that they need.
Catherine White with the National Women's Law Center says that only one in six families who meet the income guidelines are getting assistance. And she says that's also the case in Maine, where one in 10 people live in poverty. Two federally funded programs include child care benefits. One is through temporary assistance for needy families. The other direct subsidy programs are funded through the Child Care and Development Block Grant to the states. Combined, they provide about $26 million in aid to Maine families. But, says Rita Furlow of Maine Children's Alliance, there are more families who could be helped.
They don't know the program even exists because for a number of years, you know, the state hasn't done much to advertise that it's available.
Furlow says she'd like to see more government assistance dedicated to child care and also believes the state of Maine should do more on its part. There are efforts underway in Congress aimed at addressing the issue.
I've been supporting nearly doubling the amount of funding that goes into child care funding programs like Head Start, preschool development grants.
First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, a Democrat, serves on the House Appropriations Committee.
I mean, those are really significant sources of high-quality, good care that's affordable for parents, but there are nowhere near enough slots, and we should be making that investment.
On the Senate side, Maine Republican Susan Collins also supports an increase in child care subsidies. Collins, who serves on the Senate Appropriations Committee, says the current budget includes an increase of $2.3 billion over last year.
That is an historic increase and brings up the total for annual funding to $11.7 billion, a record high.
Collins says the president has also added $1 billion in one-time funding to the states through the Child Care Entitlement Program, but says it's not clear what conditions have been placed on that money.
It appears that the president is tying eligibility for the states to receive this funding to their reduction in regulations or requirements that raise the cost of care.
And Collins says she'd like to see even more federal money dedicated to child care. As both the House and Senate budget committees continue work toward a September deadline, Maine Senator Angus King has authored a bill that would nearly double the child care tax credit. More than 28,000 families in Maine claimed the credit on their federal tax returns in 2016, which provided more than $15 million in aid. King says the child care affordability problem has a real impact on the overall economy.
If you talk to Maine businesses, they desperately need workers. And one of the things that's keeping people from working is the inability to afford child care. So this will have a direct impact on the growth of the Maine economy.
The state of Maine also offers a child care income tax credit based on a percentage of the federal credit and provides about $4 million a year in child care assistance. Advocates say the most important part of King's legislation, which has bipartisan support, is that it is refundable, which means the amount of the credit can exceed a family's tax liability. The current tax credit provides very little, if any, help to low-income families because they just don't pay income taxes. Amy Matsui of the National Women's Law Center says she's reluctant to predict how the subsidy or tax credit proposals will fare in Washington this year, but she's encouraged that the issue has bipartisan support.
Both sides of the aisle recognize that more needs to be done to support working families, and I think that's an important marker in kind of the legislative landscape.
Some members of Maine's delegation, however, say they're concerned that as budget negotiations continue, talks may stall on other issues, and that Congress will once again pass a continuing resolution that will keep spending on child care assistance at current levels. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine Public's deep dive child care in Maine's made possible in part by the John T. Gorman Foundation and United Way's Women United. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock with NPR's pop culture critic Linda Holmes on her new novel and TV shows and movies worth watching. I'm Nora Flaherty.